C. West coast of Iceland, spring equinox, circa 980 AD. Castoff.
Leave! Little time is left. They must leave now!
The headman's voice rang out over a pounding surf as the setting sun sank into the waves and the sky began to darken. At his words, 17 chained men and one woman were pulled along the shoreline and their hoods were removed. They were right to chain us, Tiller muttered to himself. He stood on the shoreline, shackled with the other men, and stared at the ship that waited for them. The sight of it silenced the boasts on their lips about coming home heroes to all the fame and fortune they could want. Facing the far likelier prospect of dying at sea, they knew fear. Even Tiller, so much at one with the waves, felt the same dread. Too late to escape our fate now, he thought, filled with bitterness. But as he looked over the smooth curves of the waiting vessel, Tiller also realized with a sudden shock that he knew this ship, even though he had never seen it before. What had he said so long ago? Build her like a young woman. Give her the speed and power of a warship, but the carrying capacity of a merchant's nur to hold the things they'll need for life. Make her beautiful. Whoever takes the voyage you describe will need to feel proud. It'll give them strength and courage. The headman called again. This time the crew was herded into the water and shoved up the boarding plank. One by one the men lifted their wrists for the manacles to be unlocked, and the watching crowd cheered. But as the irons rattled off, the crew began to argue loudly, shoving at one another. The woman was pushed aboard last, her wrists chained as well. She would serve as the fish girl, part cook, part healer, and crew's helper for the voyage. As the torches flickered on her face, Tiller could clearly see wet tracks of tears.
Stop fighting! The headman shouted at the crew. Look east! The moon has almost cleared the hills already. Get to your oars! Your ship is heavy and the surf is high, and you will have to row hard. Be ready!
He turned to the man who counted the moons and seasons.
Calendar, you be ready as well to call the rope release.
The calendar nodded. He had prepared for this exact moment for months, watching carefully across the winter as the length of daylight drew equal to the night. Only one or two more days, he had reported yesterday to the headman. Spring is almost upon us, Godi.
And the moon? The Godi had asked.
Full tomorrow night. It will rise just after Sol sets in the sea. Calendar had hesitated, the briefest pause before he continued.
Such a rare thing! And too nearly coincide with the even day and night that brings springs and starts our year. Inconceivable, it foretells a remarkable voyage.
Ready the ship and the men, the headman had cried. They will sail at moonrise tomorrow.
Last to be unlocked, Tiller watched the men who would be his crewmates for the next 3 years. All were seasoned in the ways of the sea, and like him, all were outlaws. Beyond that, they were as different from one another as any crew might be. Some were tall, some short, some were disfigured by scars and others handsome. Some seemed talkative and others stayed morosely silent. Tiller saw all of humanity in their faces. Strength, weakness, greed, fairness, brutality and humor. What did they see in his own face? Did they see the uncertainty in him? The willingness to risk their lives to prove himself right? The fish girl woman desperately looked from face to face of the people on the shore, but no one would meet her gaze. She did not watch the headman as he unlocked her wrist irons, but stared only at the face of the moon god rising over the shoreline hills, and her face filled with dread. How old? Tiller wondered. She looked to be about 25, and still no finger ring for marriage? For certain, not because of her looks. The entire crew was eyeing her. Any fool could see trouble coming. Was that the reason for the oath they'd been made to swear? To protect her at all cost until they find land? More importantly, why was she on this voyage at all? Women usually served as fish girls for crews on short journeys, a couple of weeks or a month at most. Had anyone told this woman how long they'd be gone and how terribly small their chances of returning were? Unlike the men, she did not carry the mark of an outlaw. What would compel her to come with them?
Rowers, ready oars!
Strong hands gripped the long oak poles, and the crew prepared to pull the ship through the surf. Tiller held the steering oar. Through it he could feel the waves frothing against the strong hull. The ship bucked against the ropes holding her, an exhilaration knifed through tiller, reckless and hard. Those sweeping timbers longed to be free of land, and he in turn longed to feel the strength of them surging through the open sea.
"Almost ready," the headman shouted. "Release the ropes on my command."
He cleared his throat. Oh gods, he was going to give a speech.
"You on this voyage are headed straight into the heart of danger. We pray that your courage will set us all free." "We're not brave, we're dead men," shouted one of the rowers. "What difference does it make at sea or on land?"
The headman frowned and continued his speech, his words of hope in stark contrast with the grim faces on board, and Tiller's thoughts drifted. He had not murdered anyone, but no one else from the fight had survived to say so. Men he had counted as friends had tumbled to the ground and bled out, their open eyes as colorless as the sky. With them went testimony that might have saved him. Guilty, the council had said at the trials, at the quarterly trials at Thorn's Ting. 3 years outside the law. Being outlawed might as well be a death sentence. Outlaws enjoyed no protections that the law had once offered to them. Take an outlaw's tools, and he could complain to no headman about the theft. Take his fox traps and the furs he had prepared to sell. Take his last rind of cheese, his last crust of bread, and give them to your own sons and daughters, and no one would stop you from letting him starve.